WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
The 59th Cannes Film Festival wrapped up on Sunday when the winners were announced. Cannes is the most important international film festival. Many of the movies that were shown there will be making their way to American theaters. Our critic at large, John Powers, who is also the film critic for Vogue, was at Cannes. We asked him to tell us about some of the best and worst films he saw there. John, welcome back to Fresh Air. Should we start with the grand prize winner?
Yes, I think that'd be a good idea.
So who was it?
The grand prize winner was a film by Ken Loach called The Wind That Shakes the Barley. Not a particularly alluring title, I might add, which is a film about the Irish Troubles. And it's sort of a Warner Brothers-style movie about two brothers who wind up on opposite side of the Irish independence struggle. It's a political film, very much anti-British colonialism, and it's a very serious, sober, left-wing movie.
Did you like it?
I thought it was okay. It's actually a nicely made movie. I mean, if you've seen the works of Ken Loach, who's made a lot of films and has been at Cannes a lot of times, I think there's a limit to how good they can ever be. He's a solid, studious, left-wing filmmaker who presents you with historical things in a way that aren't particularly exciting, but they're always intelligent.
Well, last year's grand prize winner, L'Enfant, I don't think it did that well here, and I've heard a lot of kind of disappointed responses to it.
Well, I think what's peculiar about Cannes in the award-giving ceremonies is that there's a weird kind of anhedonia that takes over among jurors, you know, because, you know, this year the film that everyone really, really liked most was a Pedro Almodovar film called Volver. I mean, if you looked at the critics' ratings, if you talked to people, the one thing you felt confident of was that was the one film that everyone at Cannes seemed to really like. Now, Almodovar has had lots of films at Cannes, and he never wins. And you start realizing, oh, that one reason he never wins is that his films are considered to be too pleasurable. There's, in fact, this...
Yeah, that always bothers me when I see a movie, too.
Yes, I know. I'm annoyed by people who can actually time their jokes well and whose sentimental moments actually touch me rather than just make me groan. I mean, in talking to people, you realize that in the festival world, there's this strange sense that artistry doesn't include doing things that please the crowd as much as they might. So, you know, that Almodovar at Cannes is kind of like Howard Hawks or Alfred Hitchcock, you know, who famously never won Oscars. Almodovar goes all the time, often has the movie that people like the best, and then never wins. Because there's this strange perception that to make a movie that's well-plotted, well-acted, funny, touching, and in fact a crowd pleaser is so easy to do, that, in fact, he shouldn't be honored for it. When, of course, you're always thinking to yourself, if it's so easy to make an Almodovar film, how come so much of the stuff you see in the world is so inept?
Well, he did win a couple of awards, though. He won Best Screenplay, and the actresses in the film shared the Best Actress award.
Yes, one of the interesting things about Almodovar is he's one of the great directors of actresses in the world. In this particular film, he had Penelope Cruz, who came back from Hollywood and reminded us again that she's actually a really terrific actress when she's not acting in English. I mean, she's really wonderful. And Almodovar's old actress, Carmen Maura, who was in a lot of his earlier films, and who they'd had some sort of split, but she came back. And you actually had those two plus two other actresses who were younger in between them. And in fact, it's a wonderful cast and extremely well performed. And at the time the film showed, many people thought, oh, the actresses will get an award because it's just a terrific ensemble.
Well, I love Almodovar's film, so I can't wait to see it. What were the big bombs of the Cannes Film Festival?
Well, the biggest single bomb, I think, was an American film called Southland Tales by a guy named Richard Kelly. It was his second film. His first film was kind of a cult hit called Donnie Darko, a film which I liked but, you know, didn't adore. But everyone was really excited to see his movie. The problem about Cannes for filmmakers is that the big film of the day shows at 8:30 in the morning. And this in a city where people during the festival are staying out really late at night. His film showed at 8:30 on a Sunday morning. It was 2 hours and 40 minutes long, sort of an apocalyptic comedy about Los Angeles, set in the year 2008 after a nuclear attack. And the movie is frankly a mess. People were walking out from about 20 minutes on. At the end, it got roundly booed. Various critics suggested it was the worst film ever to play at Cannes. And so it was like hugely unpopular. I was actually less hostile toward it because I thought here was a guy who'd actually gone for it. Is that the movie is so overstuffed with jokes, many of them not funny, ideas, characters, that in a way I thought if you're going to make a film and it's going to come to Cannes, it should be really striving to be a big, amazing movie.
Before The Da Vinci Code had a chance to be panned by critics in daily newspapers, it opened at Cannes. What kind of reaction did it get there?
Silence. You know, I didn't actually go to the official screening because, you know, that's for big shots. And it's essentially people with jewels and black tie who would go to the official opening night ceremony. But the people who were there, who I did know, all reported they'd never heard it so quiet. You could actually hear individual people clapping at the end, which is a kind of – it's almost worse than boos. Because people were just so stupefied by the dullness of the film that, you know, they just couldn't wait to get out and get to the party. It was very funny because that was the end of this huge process, at least in Europe, where the Da Vinci Code was as inescapable as sales tax. You know, every newspaper had the Da Vinci Code on the cover. You saw TV coverage of Tom Hanks taking the train from London to Cannes. Everything was going for the film. And then the film came in. Basically, no one liked it at Cannes, although it's obviously made a lot of money since then.
What are some of the most controversial films that showed this year at Cannes?
Well, there in controversy terms, the interesting film was something that would seem that it wouldn't be controversial, which was Sofia Coppola's film about Marie Antoinette, called Marie Antoinette, starring Kirsten Dunst as the famous, slightly airheaded queen of France. What the film does is treat Marie Antoinette not as a political figure, but as a teenage girl in love with boys and shopping and things. And it uses contemporary pop music, things like the Gang of Four, to tell the story of Marie Antoinette. It's the kind of film that if you like it, you think, what a terrifically interesting film, even if you don't like everything in it. It's also the kind of film, if you don't like it, you really hate it. And so the world divided profoundly on Marie Antoinette. There were probably lots of boos. I mean, there were certainly lots of boos, and there was lots of applause. You know, and you could actually summarize this difference in opinion if you looked at the New York Times, where one of the critics really liked it and one of the critics didn't like it, or in the rankings that they give at the festival, where various critics give their rating of every film. The French critics, for instance, half of them gave it 4 stars, the highest. And the other half were busy trashing it.
Where do you fall on this scale?
It's so embarrassing to say that I'm slightly in the middle. I did like it, but I saw that the second half isn't as good as the first half. But I, like many critics, liked the fact that it was trying to take a new approach to making a historical film. One very famous French critic named Michel Simon, you know, came up to me and said, "It is not perfect, but, you know, if a Frenchman had made this film, it would be so dull and so predictable." And in fact, I think that's what I felt about Marie Antoinette. It is so lively and youthful and American and pop that if you want a serious film about Marie Antoinette, who after all didn't lead a perfect life, I mean, given that her excesses helped people starve to death. If you don't like that pop idea of Marie Antoinette, then the film strikes you as not just foolish, but almost morally reprehensible. And in fact, at the press conference, Sofia Coppola was asked about the politics of the film. And she said, I think quite honestly, that she'd had no political thoughts about the film at all. You know, for her, Marie Antoinette is no longer a political figure. She's a young girl whose life she wanted to talk about.
Now, there's a film I read a little bit about called Summer Palace that's set in China. And what surprises me is apparently there's actual sex and nudity in it, which I think is unusual for a film out of China. And, China censors its films.
It is. You know, the film is an interesting idea. It's about the generation of Tiananmen Square, the young people who were young at the time of Tiananmen Square in 1989. But its approach to this is to tell you the story of that era, not through the work of a political activist, but through the life of a young woman who's basically discovering herself through her sexual encounters with men. So that during Tiananmen Square, she joins the students, but mainly because her boyfriend is there and she wants to be close to him. And what the film does is it gives you a period of about, you know, maybe 15 years of life in China through the eyes of this young woman whose major obsessions are romantic and erotic. In the process of doing that, you actually do have very, very rare nude scenes and quite explicit nude scenes in the film that I'd never seen before in a Chinese film, certainly one with this level of acting and commitment. I mean, it wasn't some sort of grubby little underground film where they're showing somebody naked just to make a splash. And what was interesting about it to me, especially the nudity in the film, is that the Chinese don't quite know how to do it yet. You know, that they have had so few of these films that they slightly overdo it with the sex and the nudity. So even though I'm a middle-aged man who should like nothing more than to see naked Chinese women, I'm thinking, enough with this already. Can we get back to the story? You know, and I suspect by the time that it comes out in the States, and I think it will come out in the States, that will be pared back, because one of the excesses is a guy who's trying to use eroticism as a subject but who doesn't quite know the rules for how you do it without going too far. I would say in passing that among the women I know, this might have been the favorite film at the festival.
What do you think accounts for that?
I think it captures a kind of female character that movies don't deal with very often, which is a woman who is driven, but she doesn't quite know what she's driven for and driven to seek. And the way her life takes its form is in her relationships with individual men and through her sexual relationships. You know, she's not crazy. She's intelligent. She's able to hold down work. She's not some sad looking for Mr. Goodbar type. She's actually a woman who's almost exploding with so much feeling. She's trying to find some place to put it, which is all the harder in China of, say, 1988, where you were supposed to suppress all your individuality. In a sense, the film is almost about the birth of individualism in China and uses this woman as the exemplar of that.
My guest is our critic at large, John Powers. We'll talk more about the Cannes Film Festival after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is our critic at large, John Powers, and he just came back from the Cannes Film Festival. John, the Cannes Film Festival is, of course, a place to premiere new films. It's also a place to sell films. And tell us a little bit about what the marketplace was like this time around.
Yes, well, you know, part of the fun of Cannes is that it is all of the world is there. It's kind of like going to India, where there's just so much stuff. So at the upper levels of the Palais, where they show the films, you have the high art films, you know, by great international auteurs. In the basement, they have the market. And in the market are all the films that many Americans would never see unless they, you know, check the made-for-video or straight-to-video shelves at their DVD store. You know, those are the films that have, you know, the brothers of Sylvester Stallone and all those actors who used to be part of the Brat Pack, and you wonder whatever happened to them. You know, they're all making movies. And, you know, so you have crazy sex movies and you have lots of action movies. A lot of the movies that are aimed at the international audience. I had a particular favorite this year. You know, every year you find something that seems particularly delirious. My favorite this year was a thing called XD Hair Extensions. And there was a promotional reel available, but the synopsis of the film, which I will read to you because it's so insane, is simply, "Hair extensions carry the grudge of the individual to which the hair originally belonged and start attacking people wearing them at random."
That's funny.
Isn't that funny? I mean, it sounds like a joke film. You know, that's something that you'd read in a novel about how absurd the world is. But in fact, this film is directed by a respectable Japanese director. Its lead actress is the woman who played Gogo Suvari in Quentin Tarantino's Kill Bill. That in fact, it's a real project. And the market is filled with those things. You know, every time you go there, every day there are market screenings and you're looking and there are stories that seem so insane you can't believe it. And you realize, oh, that this is actually somehow the darker libido of the film industry. And then you have the high aspiration, you know, on the floors above.
I know one of the movies that was premiered at Cannes was Al Gore's film about global warming, An Inconvenient Truth. How was he received there?
Oh, Al Gore was received very, very well. You know, I mean, you know, normally what happens when I go to a film festival is I wind up making jokes about Paris Hilton because she seems to be everywhere. This time, Al Gore took over the Paris Hilton role. You know, I think it's because, you know, you so seldom get a politician at Cannes, especially such a famous one, and then with a film there, you know, that he was at dinners and giving press conferences and on yacht parties and everything. You know, Al Gore is everywhere. I sort of thought that he may not be running for president of the United States, but he looked like he was running for the president of next year's Cannes jury. I mean, and he was having such a good time. You know, I think that's part of it, is that he's there promoting the film and getting caught up in the events like everybody else. I mean, it's a very sleepless place, Cannes. I mean, everyone talks about how they go to bed at 1:30 in the morning and get up at 7:30. And the horror is when you go to bed at 1:30 in the morning, you still can't sleep because you're so wired. And you can even feel that in him, which was actually kind of nice, since so often when he's officially running for things, he seems kind of stiff, to actually see him in kind of loosey-goosey mode.
Why do you go every year to the Cannes Film Festival?
The reason I go to Cannes is that the whole world is there, that it is exhilarating and exhausting. It's filled with refinement and vulgarity. And when you go, you will see things and meet people you wouldn't meet anyplace else. You actually see the film by the director from Mauritania. You see the film from Paraguay when they haven't had a film in 30 years. And it doesn't matter whether you like it. Plus, you see what in the world is thought to be the most exciting film being made. You see Hollywood movies, you see French movies, you see Korean movies, and you talk to people. You know, you talk to critics from Mexico or from Greece, the kind of people you don't normally meet. So you learn a lot about the world. You know, in fact, one of the funny things, you know, for people who live in the U.S. now is that, given that we're constantly being told about how globalized our world is and how we have to know the world because of September 11th, it's amazing how little we actually get to see in this country of what people think about movies or what movies they make outside the United States. There are a handful of countries whose movies show here. And then if you go to a film festival, you might be able to see it. But in Cannes, it's all there. So I'm excited every time because I always see something I never have seen before. I meet someone I could never meet anyplace else. And it's a thrilling place to be.
Well, John, thanks for talking with us about the Cannes Film Festival.
Sure, happy to do it.
John Powers is our critic at large and film critic for Vogue.